Yo, what's going on, Cinema Attack? It's party time. You know, it's episode 50. You know, we got some party favors, we got some LSD, we got some weed, and we got some mushrooms. Fitting for this episode for the night. And we hit a little giggling, and that, of course, is the man, the myth, the legend, the Donovan of Mushroom Podcast and Debbie Doubles. What's going on, man?
What's up, guys? Ready to have a trippy good time?
Yeah, you know, and we, as always, we have the man, the myth, the legend, the mushroom slayer himself, Matt Cantor, the teacher, creature, feature teacher. What's going on, Matt?
Booyah! Here to party, y'all.
I thought you were gonna do like one of the mushrooms laughs.
I'm sounding like Jabba the Hutt, the whole.
I think that's what. That's what Lucas was inspired for Jabba's laugh, was watching this movie while doing shrooms.
I bet. Doing the wrong kind of shrooms, probably.
But yeah, this is episode 50. Finally here, guys, you know. Long time in the making. It was crazy. Like, a few years ago. First off, you know, big shout out to, like, how Matt and Debbie took over for Brandon and Charlene after episode 4 of Cinema Attack came out. That was a hectic time for me because I went from having no show to having a show again in the matter of minutes. It was kind of hectic. And, you know, we had our bumpy rides during the time period. And I know, actually, funny enough, I think Debbie has a few bloopers of some of the hip cups that we have. And I'm going to stop and pause right here because, Dubby, you know what this means. You're going to play a little blooper right here for the listeners to hear the hectic times of the podcast. So drop it right now.
I wish I could get my sound better, man, because I just have to go through and edit every time I fucking talk. That's why it takes forever to me to edit these shows. Like, it sounds like shit when it first comes.
How old is your laptop, man?
Soup that shit up, dude.
How old is your laptop? Fuck.
And then I amplify it, and then I have to compress it again.
How old is your laptop?
It's not that old, man. I got Windows 10 in this motherfucker.
It's
HP. It's straight.
If you didn't have that noise, you'd be all right.
I don't know what it is, man.
You guys ready?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, guys. Oh. All I hear is yeah.
That wasn't me.
Okay. And a one, and a two, and a three. Hey, what's going on, Cinema Attackers? Welcome to episode 12 of Cinema Attack. I'm your host with the most, the Boston Brando, here. And as always, I have my two co-hosts here with me. First up, we have the Creature Feature Teacher. What the fuck was that?
Wasn't me.
Dubby!
My bad, dude.
All right, let me do this again. And a one, and a two, and a one, two, three. And we're back. Yeah, it's been hectic, dude, for those. We had some bumpy starts, and even, like, as hosts ourselves, it was a bumpy ride. You know, my mic was usually, like, Mr. Robotic at first. Like, I am a robot. I am Robot Derek. Yo, what's going on? Blah, 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 blah. You know, it was fucking weird. You know, it was, like, Matt in the corner. I can't fucking hear you. Pick up, motherfucker. You know, there was some bumpy times, you know, and I think because my attitude with podcasts is I try to always better myself. And, you know, I always take that criticism. And that's why I bought a new mic, because, you know, you have to make yourself sound better, too, in these situations where, you know, my mic, I can't even try to lower this mic now. It's kind of scary because sometimes when I lower, it's like you can hear the fucking people talking in the background. It's weird. It's a weird situation with these Yetis. Still getting used to it, but it's sounding pretty good, so that's all that matters for the listeners' entertainment sense. And I want to just thank you guys for coming on this journey with me, and happy episode 50 for you guys too. Even though you weren't there for the first four, you solidified yourself as Sin Mirror attackers.
Hell yeah, man! Thank you so much, man. It's it's crazy. What, almost 3 years now? Been doing it now, so it's fucking awesome. It's many more, man. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's ride or die. Even though we only got four comments in the next section, and one of them's not even like a congratulations, but yeah, I was kind of nice during the actual post, but I'm like, rah! It's just my OCD. When you, you know, we all like that. We have like our OCD things, and that's mine. But we'll get into it when we get into that section of the show. But, so how is, you know, this is the end of the, this is the new year. We're in 2021. As we told the listeners, the reason why we're not doing a list show this year is because episode 50 was coming up. And I wanted to do something special for her, nice and chill, in a sense, where it's kind of like our Humble Begins, where we did one movie review for episode 5. And I didn't want to overpower us with doing a list show and rushing us to fucking, you know, I know we have our own, like, sporadic things, but I didn't want to rush myself to watch, try to find, like, 50 non-horror. I'll be honest, I didn't really watch a lot of non-horror this year either, because there was, because of COVID. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
I didn't want to watch fucking 50 direct-to-video Bruce Willis movies and try to make a list.
Nope.
So, because those suck, and it's the whole situation. I did see a few non-horror movies, but I think we're going to talk about that in a little bit. You know, how was your guys' holiday and how was your guys' new year? You like, was it fun? Did you guys have fun with your loved ones for, even during the rough times and shit? Go, sorry, you, Matt.
All right. Well, I was actually off for Christmas, thank God, this year. It was my time to stay home, and that's what we did. My wife and I just stayed home for on Christmas Day and, you know, did presents and chilled out. We did go to my mom, but we went to her parents later on, like a couple days later, just, you know, get everything all cleared off and everything, just because we didn't want to be around because of the spiking and everything, and people are being idiots and getting together in large groups and causing large spikes, but I won't get involved in that. But we were just happy just to stay home. We got some cool gifts, and just, it was nice. It wasn't crazy like how Christmas usually is, where you're running from house to house, you know, trying to get to everybody. Here it's like, eh, let's just stay home. The weather was nice, it was cold, but fuck it, it was good. New Year's though was a different story for me. I actually had got mandated on New Year's Eve, so I actually had to work a 15-hour shift from New Year's Eve into New Year's Day. So I pretty much went from 2 o'clock in the afternoon to 5 in the morning. And it was rough. It was a bad experience in the hospital, where I actually did cry at one point. I couldn't hold back. There was a patient that we had that I knew. He was a coworker. He worked in the janitorial department. I've been there for about 15 years. I knew him for about 15 years. I would just shoot the shit with him for a little bit, you know, a little small talk here and back and forth in the hallway, you know, just simple small talk. Well, he ended up getting COVID, and unfortunately he died, and I could not do anything. I could just sit there, stand there, you know, I'm trying to work the ventilator, trying to do everything I can, and it was rough. They brought his wife in, who happened to also work here and everything, and just watch this individual pass. It fucking sucked. And of course, being mandated too made it worse. Right. We had more codes happening, more people die. So yeah, it was a rough New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. But today I got off and I don't want to think about work because it's been shitty.
Yeah. I can relate to that somewhat, because actually earlier in the year, some person I worked with, it sucks that the way you did it, though, because you actually had to be there and shit, so that kind of sucks a little bit more. But I feel you, because when it's like that thing where you don't see that person anymore coming into work, and it kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I feel you there. That does suck. But at least the way I say it is, you gotta take it day by day in that sense too, where you just gotta stay positive and think about the loved ones in your life. You know, that'll make you happy. Yeah, I know. But you can always go home and watch a shitty shark movie that shut your brain off too.
I've watched a bunch of shitty movies lately, that's for sure. Just to clear it, and I did start picking up some Kraken rum, and I've actually been testing different like sodas with it to mix it.
Yeah. Wow. Release the Kraken.
I love that bottle, man. Those bottles are awesome.
Yeah, I bought a little small one just to test out because I don't want to spend a lot of money just to, you know, all of a sudden it sucked. So, of course, I mixed it with some Sprite, and that fucking went down smooth. And the whole thing was gone. And last couple days, I went out and bought a giant big bottle of the Kraken rum.
Nice.
I love me some Kraken. I won't lie. It's one of my favorite rums they get. It's pretty good shit. Debbie, what about you, man? How was your holidays?
Yeah, man. I just want to say I hope it turns a new leaf for you, man. Definitely hope it looks up. But yeah, mine was pretty low key. We hung out. I did get to see my parents briefly, but me and just my lady, we hung out, exchanged gifts. It was a nice evening, and kind of same way with New Year's. We just had a couple drinks and chilled out, played video games that night, and had a good night, man. So that's kind of me. I've just been enjoying the time off and stuff. Work's been crazy busy as of late, so the good old IT world, and I work with Intuit, so tax season and all that stuff, when that stuff ramps up, it's hectic in my job. So, but anyways, I'm glad to be here, man. Like I said, episode 50.
Yeah. You know, and that's sweet that you and your girl reenacted the end of 16 Candles, man.
I wouldn't say that, but yeah.
I'm making crap wise. But mine was all right. You know, we had a few people over, not too many. My sisters came over to eat. My other sister brought two kids over. Who, one of them had a fucking cold. It was a cold because I got checked. Thank God. And I got sick. I got a cold. So that was okay that it wasn't the other thing, but it still fucking sucked. A cold sucks, especially since I didn't get one last year. So it's like that thing where it's like, oh my God, I forgot how much this sucks. You know, but fucking, I'm better now. I got a little congested still, as you could probably hear from my voice. But you know, I'm doing better. You know, it kind of sucks when you had to go to work and, you know, you had to sneeze. You're like, I gotta go to the bathroom real quick with my tissue because you don't want
all over Home Depot.
Yeah, fuck Home Depot. But my holiday was fine. Christmas was fine. I got a lot of cool gifts. I was actually shocked my mom actually bought me a DVD because she's like, stop buying fucking movies. You know, she'd probably be pissed if she saw the meal I got actually today. But, I got a few posters. I got some frames coming for them. They can be hanged on my wall. I got a book on Eco Horror by Lee Gambin. It's pretty good. Yeah, I like. It's like the history of eco horror movies. So I was like, oh, this is cool. Actually, the cover is the cover of Frogs. I was like, that's awesome.
Fun future show, some eco horror.
For sure. Especially after that Severin announcement with Day of the Animals and Grizzly. Yeah. I know Matt's buying that beer.
I already did. I don't care. I had some money. I'm like, fuck it. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's like, yeah. I was giving shit to Sam earlier because I bought Boggy Creek earlier. I'm like, it's my fucking money. I'll buy whatever the fuck I want with it.
Yeah, you know? I got that Boggy Creek Blu-ray. It's pretty good.
Yeah. I've been just waiting to get a few extra bucks to get it because it is, I will admit, it is a pricey item.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, it's my fucking money. I bought fucking the 4K of Santa Sangre, which is like 45. I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I love that movie.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll buy whatever the fuck I want. I just actually got a big order from Shout Factory of like 5-6 Blu-rays that I ordered, like some of their like shit that's going out of print. So I'm like, I'm fucking spending whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah, sure. Why don't you do what you want with it?
For real. So shut the fuck up, Sam, because I know you buy fucking stupid shit that I don't buy. We all buy stupid shit that we don't each other buy, you know? And we don't judge, you know? I might crack wise a few times, but that's it, you know? I won't be like, oh my God, I can't believe you spent that on that. I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
Last month, I bought the David Sterling Things box set. There you go.
I know, we actually, like, how much was that? I'm like, how much was that, actually? Do you remember?
I think it was like $80.
Was it Blu-ray or DVD?
Blu-ray.
Okay.
So if I looked at it, it was kind of like, I think it was like $85. And unfortunately, it's not the complete set. He is missing part two. And I asked him, I go, well, where's part two? He said he can't get a hold of it. He said it's so out of print and hard to find that he doesn't have a copy anywhere to put on there. I'm like, well, that fucking sucks.
Well, can't you get one from the director?
He's the director. He's the one that owns it.
Oh, that's weird. I
was like, I'll give you my copy of part two. Put it on Blu-ray. So I tried to put the DVD in there in the box set. It doesn't fit. I'm like, well, this fucking sucks. Oh, well. But there's so much room in there, so if they ever do more Things movies, I could put them in there. But come on.
Yeah, you know.
And I got a bonus DVD. Just in case. The bonus DVD was the Intervision movie Things.
Was it really?
Yes, it was.
Which you already probably owned.
I already did own.
You're like, okay, let's sell the other copy now. Come on, who wants Things?
That's going into the dump bin for store credit.
Either that or you fucking send it to Donnelly to piss him off. Because if you guys don't know that story, it's kind of funny. I actually killed his podcast with that movie. That was like one of their last episodes. And you should hear that episode. It's fucking hilarious. They all sound destroyed in the intro. Like, it's time for the puppet. Oh, I don't want to do anything right now. And it's like a 5-minute review, too. It's great.
One of the really worst movies out there. But it's so fun to watch. It's so stupid.
Yeah. We should do that one time. We should just watch that.
That would be a cool commentary one.
Oh, wait till you know the commentary we're doing next and be like, oh, no. Yeah, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. That's about it for me, but... sorry again with Matt. Was there any movies you watched from 2020 that you actually liked?
Yeah, there was a few. One was actually a surprise for me because I thought I was gonna hate it, and because of one particular actress, I'm not a huge fan of Kristen Stewart at all. And I was like, oh, I want to see it, but I don't want to see it. But I said, fuck it, because I am a creature feature fanatic, and that of course was Underwater.
And
watching them going, this is actually really good. I was surprised, and my wife doesn't like her either. And we sat there, we both watched it, and we both liked the movie. It's like, wow, she actually did okay in this movie. So I liked Underwater. I thought it was a pretty cool Underwater feature. Like, if you ever want to do, like, a double feature, like with Deep Star 6 or Leviathan, you could add Underwater to the mix.
Definitely, I would probably lean more with Leviathan.
Oh, yeah, I'd definitely be with more Leviathan. Or Deep Star, but Underwater was so fun. I loved The Hunt from 2020.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't hate it.
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic and how it played off and the oops at the end.
I'll admit, though, I saw that earlier in the year. That's one I had to rewatch for sure. I enjoyed it for what it was, though.
Another one was cool. It's like a little bit of an indie one called They Reach.
Huh.
It's about this girl. She finds a reel-to-reel player, and she plays it, of course, and Elise is like a demon. And, of course, it starts picking off people all around her. They got to figure out how to stop this demon, so they get her father involved because she lost her mom. And it was like this weird, like, add Goonies to the mix, but it has some good gore to it.
Uh-huh.
It was actually pretty cool.
It sounds cool.
Yeah, I've ever seen the trailer on it. I'm like, I'll give it a shot. And when it came out, I picked it up, and I liked it. I thought it was kind of neat.
Yeah, I think that's on Shudder. I was wanting to check that out. Shudder Prom, one of the two.
And, of course, Tremors 7, Streaker Island.
Oh, my God. Real men cry at Tremors.
Damn seven. Right I did. I was so, like, bummed. I was like, what? But if this is how they end it, but so be it. That would be that's a good ending to the series. But I loved Shrieker Island. I thought it was cool. They actually brought the Shriekers back because they haven't had them since part 3. I was like, oh, okay. Or no, part 2. And, yeah. So those are some pretty good ones.
Yeah. I like Tremors 7 more. Like, a lot. It's kind of weird because everyone's saying it's the worst of the series, but I thought part 6 was kind of the... And, you know, I don't even hate part 6. I think it's just the lesser of the ones.
Yeah, that's like the lesser of them all. 6, but I thought it picked up great with 7 with all the cool features. Now they're on an island. They're on a tropical island, and it's a hunting expedition where, of course, you know, what always happens when you take something and put it into a different environment and you're going to hunt it, it's going to hunt you.
Yeah. Debbie, did you see it yet?
No, I hadn't seen that one.
It's kind of like the most dangerous game, but with the Tremor, the Graphoids, and the Shriekers and shit.
So it's like the Hunt mixed with
Tremors.
Yeah, Richard Brake plays like this millionaire who has all these creatures on the island.
And he has people, man. He's pretty good.
Yeah, it was kind of cool to see him in the movie, and John Napoleon Dynamite's in it too.
And I thought I was going to hate his character. His character wasn't annoying.
He was good in it.
Yeah.
He hasn't done much in a while, has he?
The last thing I remember seeing him was like Benchwarmers and Blades of Glory.
That's what I'm saying. It's been a while.
Yeah.
It was Blades of Glory since I saw the last time of him.
Yeah, Blades of Glory. Oh, that movie. Oh, fuck. But, Debbie, what about you, man? Did you see anything that you liked from 2020?
Yeah, there's been some good ones. Still some heavy hitters I want to see. You know, like Possessor, BFW. Those are two I really want to check. And Meta Devil Take You 2. I want to check that. But early in the year, I actually liked Gretel and Hansel. That was a PG-13 one. But
yeah,
really fucking cool atmospheric one. Like, just cool setting, man. A good aesthetic through that whole movie. I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah, Oz Perkins.
Yeah, man. Especially, like I said, PG-13. Like, it was effective, creepy, like... was an over jump scare. That was a good one. Another kind of surprise was The Rental. Dave Franco. His first movie. That was pretty cool.
Just watched that, actually.
Yeah, that was a pretty good flick, man. I enjoyed that one.
I gotta check it out. I haven't watched it yet.
Let's see. Mortuary Collection. I enjoyed
that. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one.
That was a really good anthology.
Clancy Brown.
Yeah, man. I dug the... hold that house, man, and the wraparound story with that one especially, too. That was fucking cool.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
That was heavy hitter ones off the top of my head.
The one that I really love is Uncaged, the Dick Moss movie.
Yeah, it's the Killer Lion flick. That movie's awesome.
You know, that was pretty... The thing I like about it, you know, when I first was getting into it, I'm like, is this going to be like one of those sci-fi channel movies? It actually takes itself super serious. It kind of takes me back to like that time period when, like the 80s when these movies are coming out, like Alligator and shit, where they take it a little bit more serious. Like there is some CGI with the lion, but there's also animatronic lions in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I like that aspect. And I like that this movie is not afraid to show a kid getting its face mauled off by a lion.
Yeah, nice. I was like, holy crap, now we're attacking kids. I'm like, okay, we're going everywhere in this movie. I remember when it was Kaufman first released, and I've been wondering, like, I watched it on Facebook. I friended the movie, of course, and here in Japan it's getting released. Here this is getting released. And I was saying I was keeping an eye on Facebook because I want to see this movie. And they say, oh, here in Japan it's getting released on Blu-ray. I'm like, Or in Amsterdam, it's getting released. I'm like, do I really want to buy a foreign release right now? I do want to see it, but then all of a sudden they said, finally in the U.S., DVD. I'm like, fuck it, I don't care if it's DVD or not. I'm buying this movie. I want to see me a Dick Moss killer lion flick, and I was I loved it.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is. It looked different, how the eyes were different colors.
Yeah, the line, yeah.
Yeah.
It goes in a little bit of the twist, too, which, because I don't know, W might not have seen it yet, so I don't want to give it away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll definitely check that one out, man.
Definitely, it's good.
Yeah.
I thought that was a 2020 release.
Yeah, I count it because it's the first time I, you know, if something gets released in the U.S., even like a foreign movie, I count it still, you know, in that sense. Where I couldn't see it in 2016, you know, like, you know. yeah, you'll love it. It has a fucking hunter with no one leg on a wheelchair. That's all I give
it. Armored wheelchair. It's pretty badass.
Yes. And he's chasing the lion in the wheelchair. It goes super fast. It's fucking great.
Ding Moss makes some fun stuff, though, so definitely look forward to that.
Hell yeah.
I wonder if he'll remake this one again.
Yeah.
Remake it in America. Remake it in America. It's set in New York.
Yeah.
Oh.
Maybe you could storm the Capitol. Oops. Too soon.
Too soon.
Oh.
Being relevant here.
Yeah. No, the problem. Line, the line just mauls Trump. Trump kind of does look like that big game hunter in the movie. Just saying. Yeah, I'm showing my colors. I'm gonna sing that song. Na 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 na. Hey, goodbye. Anyways, I also saw Tenet. I actually saw that in theaters. I went to the theater. I saw it actually in Maine. I really enjoyed it. My parents, on the other hand, are like, what the fuck is going on? Which you kind of get with a lot of Christopher Nolan movies.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what the fuck is going on? And, you know, I actually had to go get popcorn for them during the one scene. So there's actually a scene of Tenet that I haven't seen somewhere. But I feel like I didn't miss much, if that makes sense. But I might have. I don't know. It was a weird movie, but it has Russian Kenneth Branagh in it. And that's all that matters. Kenneth Branagh with a Russian accent, I will kill you all. I was like, this is why I kind of like Kenneth Branagh. I wish he acted more in these roles. But, yeah, that was pretty good. Bill and Ted Face the Music. I fucking died laughing. It was fucking hilarious. It was so much fun. Movie that I thought sucked, Wonder Woman 1984. Saw that fucking on HBO Max. It should stay there. Fucking sucked. It was fucking boring. You know, this is a story. Pedro Pascal was actually the best part of the movie, in my opinion. I just didn't like what they did with the cheetah character. Even though Kristen Wiig actually did okay in the role. It's just the way that the whole thing with the wishes, per se, happened. It was kind of weird. But that's all I'll give away about that one. But, you know, I might rewatch that one again. There's a few other ones I saw, like The Mortuary Collection I really liked. If you guys haven't seen it on Netflix, Day of the Lord, that was a pretty good possession flick.
Haven't seen that.
Spanish flick. It was pretty good. There's actually been a few possession flicks this year. Ironically, like you had The Cleansing Hour on Shudder, which is pretty fucking awesome too. Metamorphosis, the South Korean one, which I highly, highly recommend. Might be my number two or three film of the year if I was doing a horror list. Zombie for Sale, I love that movie. That movie has so much heart and passion. The better of the South Korean zombie movies this year. Because it's very fun and self-referential and has heart. It's kind of a mixture of like Train to Busan mixed with like something like Warm Bodies. And with like the happiness of the Katakuris. It has a lot of heart to it. And it's super funny. And it has some great heartfelt moments with the family members in the movie. I highly recommend Zombie for Sale. My number one film of the year so far of 2020. It was so good. Pick up the Arrow Blu-ray. Or if you have the Arrow streaming, if you guys stream, mostly for the listeners, I know we're all collectors here, pick up that movie. really great stuff. And for another one that kind of disappointed me, not so much. It was just, I wasn't really a big fan of Possessor.
Really? Yeah, see, that's one I was wanting to check out.
I might have just not been in the right of mood.
Mm-hmm.
It just, I don't know, it was weird. It's a weird movie. It's very ambiance and tone, and, you know, it definitely feels like a Cronenberg brand. It feels like from the same dude who did Antiviral.
Yeah.
It's just, like, it just went over my head, I think. It's just, I had to be in the right mood to watch those certain type of movies. But, and another one that kind of was disappointing for me this year was Peninsula.
I still haven't watched that one yet.
That's the Chang de Busan.
Things
All right. I'll get you in the right mindset when you actually see the scene. This is whole car chase scene that actually takes place in the city. The cars in the city are all CGI'd.
Mm.
Okay.
And it looks like Need for Speed PlayStation 1 CGI.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's rough.
It took me completely, like, out of the movie. Plus, I didn't really like the characters that much, like the original. They were very fucking annoying to me. Especially the one whiny bitch in the movie. Hey, Dad! Hey, Dad! Oh. I'm like...
Yeah, one of the duds I thought for 2020 was The Relic. I fell asleep to that movie constantly. I'm like, this is kind of boring.
Spoiler alert, that's actually my number 4 movie of the year.
Well, yeah, I just couldn't get into it. I know I don't mind some slow burns, but my God. My wife passed right out through it.
Well, you know what the allegory of the movie is, right?
Yeah.
It's all about dementia.
Yeah, the whole... I kind of figured that out, but again, it was just so dull.
I really loved it, but whatever.
Yeah, everyone's all different. You could love one movie, and I could hate it. Versus my first, I could say, like, I enjoyed The Beach House, and I know a lot of people didn't like The Beach
House. I like The Beach House, too, actually.
I got a very cool vibe of, like, Color Out of Space vibe to it, and the whole mutating people into fish creatures-like things was great.
Yeah, I liked it, too.
Nice.
Yeah, The Peninsula was... yeah.
I gotta watch that.
Yeah, Need for Speed. yeah, that's about it for me. And, you know, that's a lot of craziness in the world. But, you know, there's still some pretty good movies out there. So that's good, at least.
Dude, that's 2020 wasn't a big dud for us, at least.
Yeah, at least we got some good movies out of it, even, like, all things considering, because a lot of movies were held back. Like, some heavy-hitter movies, like Candyman, and the Spiral Saw movie, fucking...
Halloween 2.
Black Widow, you know, like, movies I would actually go see in theaters, but probably won't happen.
Right.
You know, so... Oh, another movie I actually forgot to mention. I saw Greenland with Gerard Butler. That movie was a lot more horror than a lot of the horror movies this year. Huh. It was fucking scary.
Oh, is that the asteroid one?
It's a comet, but yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, nice. It's kind of scary because it's actually not a... It's a comet, it's not a... So it's like big balls of gas instead of like rock. It's fucking nuts. And that's not even the scary part. Like, that's in the background. What's scary is how everything reacts to the situation, because there's a scene where, like, you know, what ends up happening is, you know, they end up getting split apart, and, you know, the son's a diabetic, so the mom's trying to go, like, this pharmacy to get, like, the medicine, and a fucking gang comes in and starts blasting everyone in there, and, you know, you see a scene of, like, a little old lady just walking with, like, a stroller, gets fucking shot in the throat with a shotgun. I'm like, what the fuck? Like,
wow.
Yeah, there's some violence and death in that movie that's not caused by the actual comet, which I was, like, shocked to see. And The way I would describe it, it's actually a better version of 2012 than 2012 was.
Nice.
Yeah, it was actually really good, and, you know, it put a smile on my face because there's a cameo by Scott Glenn in the movie, and I'm like, fucking Scott Glenn's still alive. He's like 90, but that dude was like 70 and back in the 80s. It's fucking nuts. I love Scott Glenn, and I was like, yes, I knew that was going to happen. But, yeah, it's a pretty good movie. I think you would like it, Matt. You like?
I'll definitely check it out. I like my natural disasters.
Yeah, we actually did the big spender. I was like, let's rent a movie to watch, and we like, you know, it's one of those like in theater like $19 movies, $20 rental movie. Which I get it. They're trying to make money for what's happened. So it was like, okay, yeah, we'll rent it, which I'm okay with, you know, because we get to not spend as much. Like, you would spend more of that than that in the fucking theater anyways, you know?
That's true.
Yeah. You know? So it's whatever, you know, $20, fuck it. Here you go, Greenland, here's $20. But whatever. But, yeah, it was a fine year. A lot of interesting aspects of the year that I found kept me going. You know, I actually got to see a lot of movies this year that I haven't seen before, which have been on the back burner too. Which, sorry if I have to do a little self plug here. While this show comes out, maybe this show will be out already. Recorded a top 10 of first time watches of the year for They're Here. Me and Lacey did like movies that weren't 2020. We did a top 10 of our first time watches. So that was pretty fun that we started that tradition for that show. It was pretty fun. You know, our lists were very different, but we talked about a lot of movies and we're like, oh, I gotta see that movie. I gotta check that movie out. And it was kind of cool because a bit of a smile on my face when I hear like Lacey saw like movies like The Fly remake and The Thing for the first time. And I was like, it put a smile on my face because I wish I had that experience again to see a movie for the first time. Like those ones. You know?
That is always the special, man.
Mm-hmm.
Those new old discoveries. I always like that when we do that on our year ends.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, it was pretty good. And I don't want to give it away what my number one was for that, just in case it hasn't come out. But it's a film that I think I should have seen years ago, and, you know, I'm glad I finally did, from a director that's one of the best directors ever. But that was pretty fun, you know, but we're not here to talk about that. If you guys want to hear that, go listen to that show. We're here to talk about a movie that I've been dying to cover on a show. I know we were supposed to be doing this on Underwater Kaiju at some point, but I'm like, fuck it, I'm sick of fucking waiting. We're going to do it on my fucking show. With my fucking rules. I like it that way. We're going to pop it like it's hot. And we're going to be back after this little break, and we're going to play the trailer for a little movie known as Matengo. And I will be back right after this to delve into this movie. So we'll be just right there. Back. Well, I'm going to incorporate you guys, too, with it.
We're just going to sit back and just let him talk.
You know, I'm going to incorporate. We're all going to be back. But, you know, I'm going to be the leader of the review, pretty much, where, you know, I bring up things and you guys bring up things. And, like, you know
what. Tom, man.
Yeah. You know, so we'll be right back after this. And we'll do this. So, be right back. Yeah.
の謎の島、鳥も獣も生息できない無人島に漂着した7人の若者たちが見たものは何か。
魚、海藻、ウミガメの卵、ヘビでもトカゲでも食えそうなものは何でも集めるんだ。
今日は言わせてもらうぜ。 草を見たら一本一本引っこ抜いてその根をしゃぶってみる。新芽を見たらこれも口入れて噛んでみる。これが食料探しだろ。
脱出するか脱出するか、大自然と孤独の中で食料と水を求めて、生々しい人間の生きる欲望と執念、パンチと裏切り。
食べ物に不自由してるように見えて。
アミ、助けてくれ、お願いだ。
ねえ、あのキノコ食べられるんでしょ。
あれを食べたらおしまいだよ。
アキコさん、
が生んだ巨大な残虐無残な吸血マタンゴ、マタンゴにご期待ください。
ほほほほほほほ。 And we are back, everybody. And Dub, what movie are we talking about? What's it about, yo?
So from 1963, we are doing Mantango, which is directed by Ishiro Honda, and it is about shipwreck survivors who slowly transform into mushrooms. And I think there's a little more to it than that, though.
There definitely is. And the thing... well, first off, I gotta start out... This is actually based off a short story, this movie, if you didn't, guys didn't know that. By an author known as William H. Hodgins. And the original short story is called The Voice in the Night. And the cool thing about William H. Hodgson is he was actually H.P. Lovecraft's favorite author.
Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah, so, which kind of makes sense when you get in the gist of the movie. Now, the first thing I'm going to read for you guys is a quote off the back of this awesome book that I got about Ishiro Honda's career. It's actually a quote, and I'm going to read it for you. I first saw Godzilla in 1956 at the tender age of 8. Something about the film filled me with somber dread. Not the giant fire-breathing monster destroying Tokyo, but the overall tone, the underlying sadness, a sense of grief and horror. Japan is the only nation to suffer atomic bombs dropped on two of cities, and Godzilla gave powerful expression to this emotional ambiance disguised as a giant monster movie. The director of the seminal motion picture was Ishiro Honda, the creator of astounding output of science fiction horror films from Toho Studios and one of my personal cinematic gods. And I'll give you guys two guesses who said that. W, who do you think said that quote? Famous director that we know.
Tarantino, maybe?
Nope. Matt, do you have any guess?
John Carpenter.
It was John Carpenter.
Oh!
Nice.
That was a guess.
It was, yeah. Yeah, John Carpenter is a huge fan of Ishiro Honda, which kind of brings me into my thing. There was this movie influenced The Thing in a way, I think. His version of The Thing.
I could kind of see that.
Yeah. Definitely the transformations and stuff.
And just the paranoia of the group, too.
Right. Isolation. A lot of things.
Yeah. You see a lot of, the Quatermass films. Carpenter was also influenced with, the look of the creatures. The paranoia and dread, this is... The thing about it, this movie's before Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, that was something I was definitely going to bring up. I even had in my notes that it's crazy how some of these scenes mirror Night of the Living Dead, even.
It's insane in that sense where, you have, this Lovecraftian tale about the shipwrecked crew. Very Gilligan's Island, if I may imagine. You know the whole beginning scene with like one of my favorite Japanese actresses in this movie, Kumu Mizuno, as the starlit singer girl. Singing like this weird like la 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 la
Mammy or whatever.
Yeah. Kumi Mizuno, if you probably don't recognize her. She's in a lot of great... The whole cast is Toho originals from this time period. Akira Kubo, who's in a bunch of Godzilla films, like Invasion of the Astro Monsters, Son of Godzilla, Destroy All Monsters. He's a fucking fantastic. He's the main character of this film, who tells the tale in the hospital as we're introduced to him. Kenji Sahara, fucking boss from the original Mothra. He's fucking awesome in this movie, too. Kumi Mizuno, you probably recognize her more as she was the lead female Exilian from Invasion of the Astro Monsters. You know, the one that Nick Adams is, like, in love with.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets killed. And they all look alike because they're all Kumi Mizuno and the female race of the ex-aliens, which is amazing. She's a goddess to me. I love her. She's like, Frankenstein Conquers the World, one of my favorite movies. You know, it's cool to hear like interviews with her where, you know, she actually has an interview in this book from Steve Reifold where this was like one of her first like movies and, you know, it was kind of big for her. And, you know, she was, her heart was pounding during the experience of this because of the situations going on within the film itself. But it's cool to see like all these like Godzilla staple actors in this movie. I kind of nerd out to see like this ensemble pulled out. I love Kenji Sahara, Akira Kubo. They're fucking great in this movie, in my opinion. It's very interesting because Akira Kubo actually didn't do the score for this. The score is done by Sabo Beku, which kind of fits the film overall, in my opinion, in that sense. And the thing that I always think about Motengo is the reason why Ishiro Honda made this movie. I want to read a little passage here for you guys before I get your thoughts on the movie. Pretty much what was going on in Japan at the time is it was getting modernization of Japan during this time period where America was taking over its industrial, which you get a lot of scenes of that. Like when, the main character, Akira Kubo's character, is looking out at the window of the hospital. He sees industrialized Japan. So the movie is about dehumanization of society in a sense where Honda wasn't cool with like all these like rich, fashionable, upper class Japanese acting all fucking American and trying to make America centralized in Japan. He wanted to make it modernized. And the thing about it is it's a socialization tale because all these people are rich assholes when we first meet them. But when they're getting the fucking island, they have to survive on their own. And fucking it backfires in their face in that sense where pretty much, around this time, there were people who started to be Americanized and they have a very modern lifestyle, recalled Honda. There were rich people who sent their kids to school in foreign cars, the kind of thing. We try to show the type of social background in this film where, you know, he's trying to show, yeah, these people are fucking rich, spoiled socialites in that sense, which were coming to like that Americanization of Japan. All these characters kind of embody that in a way, and the way that the mushrooms consumed them and they all became one again. And the dehumanization of them, which I kind of like that aspect of the movie. But we'll start with Dub. Dub, this is a first time watch for you, right?
Yeah, it was.
And the aspect, what did you think about it, man?
Yeah, man, it was definitely deep and I was definitely picking up on some of that messages and because I know how Honda works at this point, man, just from, you know, from the atomic bomb to, you know, what he's saying about the Americanization of Japan. And that's pretty awesome. you know, you mentioned the opening shot, man. I love that opening shot, overlook the city, and I like how that opening credits kind of turns its way back, you know, at the end as well. But man, it was a batshit movie. I was surprised with really some of the just overall drama and just how good the sets and locations looked as well. I mean, deep forest, you had cool water settings, you had like labyrinths, old laboratories. Like I said, it was really cool and kind of Land of the Lost in aspect once they hit this island. Fucking cool flick, man.
I did get some Land of the Lost vibes, especially with those sets, too.
Yeah.
Good call. Matt, was this a first time watch for you, man?
Actually, yes, it is. Because if people know my story about this movie, I was supposed to get it from Netflix back in the day when you got discs in the mail. I was supposed to get it next in my queue, and whoever had it kept it, and I never got it. So I was so bummed because I never got a chance to watch this movie. I was like, fuck. It's and of fake, course, man. The DVD's out of print, and it's a little expensive. It's like, do I really want to spend $30 on it? I don't really want to spend $30 on the DVD. I kind of do and I kind of don't. So when you're glad that you had it and we got a chance to watch it, this movie was fun. I loved how you get the nature of the group, where in the beginning of the movie they're all friends, they're all, you know, chatting on the boat, they're all having a good time, you know, talking to each other. Then all of a sudden you just see how they underdevelop themselves and start, you know, turning on each other and how things go awry. I also liked how the seagull scene, where they were hunting the birds. There's no animals at all on the island. It's so quiet. I'm surprised they didn't bring that up, how quiet the island was. Then the bird flies by, and I all of a sudden does like a U-turn and goes, nope, goes the other way. And the guy's like, wow, even the seagull doesn't want to come here. It's like, maybe there's something awry then. That's why the birds don't show up on the island.
It's sorry to cut you off here. It kind of reminds me, actually, I read this book by Jeremy Robinson called Island 3731. And there's actually a scene that actually mirrors that scene, too, in the book.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, so that's kind of a cool... I actually seen a few movies that actually mirror this scene that came after this movie. And it's kind of cool because this movie's kind of influential without it not being. You know, it's kind of crazy in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it goes crazy. Like, W is bringing up, like, the whole, like, Night of the Living Dead thing, man. What do you got on that, man?
Yeah, I mean, especially towards the later end of the flicks, not to give that away, but there's definitely scenes where they're locked in and kind of isolated in a contained area, and it's basically a siege situation. I mean, right out of Night of the Living Dead, and the way some of these disfigured people look, I mean, it definitely makes you... you know, think of a zombie kind of flick. Something else as far as the monsters go, I think there's kind of a cool transition, and it kind of keeps it ambiguous as far as whether these are actual monsters or people or they're ghosts and whether they're really there or not.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. The thing, like the mid-tier, like mushroom peoples, there's been a lot of controversy with those looks because they kind of... A lot of people were saying they look like bomb survivors with the spores on them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
see that too.
There's a lot of controversy with this film when it first came out. It's very interesting, that aspect where, like, the first mushroom people we don't see is not until, like, 30 minutes into the movie. And it's so weird because it's like the paranoia of the group kind of ensues after that. Oh, because you seeing ghosts now? And then you're like, no, we're looking at the fucking footprints outside, you know, in that sense. Where it's like, you see like the paranoia happening once they get in. Like the first scene of like trush issues happens when you see two of these assholes eating the food that they found by themselves. Sorry, finders keepers. You know,
yeah. Fucking dicks.
Those two were so dicks, and you know, I knew something was going to happen where those two were going to end up killing each other. The writer and the other guy, is like, the other guy was a sketchball, but then the writer started becoming a fucking, like, once he got that fucking rifle, I'm like, oh god, this guy's a fucking major dick.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Mammy, fucking Kumi Mizuno's character, is like, she's a man whore. She just wants a man at her side, and whoever has the dominant power at the time, that's who she's going to go to.
That's what she wants. She was like, oh, look at me. They want me.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's a very interesting what happens with her and, like, Kenji Sahara's character, because she was originally with Kenji Sahara's character in the movie. And she's like, oh, you want to go with the writer? You know, what do you mean? You know, like, you want to, you know, yeah, you're not, you're weak. You're a weak man. And, you know, you kind of feel bad for the other girl, Akio, who's, she's kind of like the bobber of this movie. She is the bobber of this movie. She's like, oh, professor! You know? You know, it's cool in that sense where you get, like, these different characterizations with the characters, too, that you usually don't get in, like, a lot of, like, these type of movies where, you know, like, one's a writer, one's a professor, one's the skipper, one's the captain of the ship. You have, like, the
student, yeah.
Yeah, the student there, and then you have, like, the cocktail singer. That's the word I was looking for earlier. She's like a, you know, like a ballroom singer or some bullshit.
All
like
they
that.
Wanted was a 4-hour tour. No.
Yeah, you know, they just wanted to tour around, and all of a sudden, you know, they have like that dinner scene where they're talking about like the world outside, like Tokyo and shit. And then they get, you know, they get shipwrecked and shit like that. And they end up, you know what would be a great, you know, I was getting like Lost Continent vibes watching this with like the shipyard graveyard too, like in that sense.
See that,
because mm-hmm. we just watched that movie recently, so I was getting vibes of that. That'd be actually a weird double feature of this and Matango. Killer weeds and killer mushrooms.
Yeah, and there's a lot of foreshadowing that happens once they get to the island, like when the blind man tries the berries and, you know, spits them out, and that's kind of when he warns, you know, be careful the food out here and that kind of thing. So like how it sets up a little foreshadowing there.
Yeah, and then, you know, you get to the island and, you know, they find that ship where they end up, like, making their home for a few until, you know, they mm-hmm. make a plan. And that's when, you know, the fucking dicks find the food and they're trying to separate the food in portions. And then the first mushroom guy comes along. Fucking, it's kind of creepy, you know, you get the one dude trying to steal food. Fucking, he's like, oh shit!
Whoops!
And then he comes into the fucking, you know, the ship and with a room, and you like look at him, and it's like, whoa, what the fuck is that? And then it disappears. I'm like, are they ghost mushrooms? Like, that scene always bothers me in the movie. It doesn't bother me because it just adds more to the paranoia because they end up fighting each other. And you know, at first I'm like, wait a minute. Are there, like, mushroom ghosts? You know, in that sense. But then I was thinking, because the rest of the guys didn't see them, it actually plays well into, like, the more of the paranoia. Those are like, oh, you're fucking bullshit. You didn't see no fucking guy with fucking sores coming up. You know?
Right. And, so, and there again, their distrust, too. It just elevates everybody's trust issues.
Then the one guy starts eating the fucking mushrooms and it goes all fucking bonkers after that. You know, he's grabbing guns and trying to rape Kumi Mizumo.
Yep.
You know.
Call a bad trip.
And he's like, I want the other girl too. He's like, Akiko? And she's like, I want her instead. She might be nicer.
I also think too that since the ship, each room had a different color, like, fungus to it, where, like, one room was all orange, the kitchen was, like, yellow, even the captain's quarters had a different color.
Yeah.
That the fungus in there is another type of mushroom, where these could cause the paranoias. This is what causing everybody to go crazy, I bet. That and also, the lack of food, lack of water, lack of everything, being secluded, everything all in the mix, and then all of a sudden now they had the mushroom people in the mix, and now they're all fucked big time.
Yeah, the way I kind of look at it, Matt, is it kind of plays into the actual ending of the movie.
Yep.
Where it's not just the mushrooms itself, if you eat them, it's just the whole place. It's kind of how I feel about the beach house from this year.
Yeah.
Where you know, it's not just if you get bit, you're fucking fucked. It's like if you just breathe fucking shit in, then you're fucked too. You know, it's not just... It's spores. It's fucking everything. It's just the whole area in that sense where even if you don't... Which it kind of makes it lazy in the American dub of this movie when it actually...
Yeah, they just threw that in there.
You know, in that sense where I ate the mushrooms, that's why I'm like this. No. And it, you know, we'll get more into that in a minute, but... You know,
they didn't really get much into it where they found certain parts of the ship that had no fungus at all. And, of course, the scientist was going, well, there's the alcohol, there's no fungus on this. Here's this cabinet that was opened, and it was perfectly fine. It's like, why are these areas not touched? And it kind of, I don't know, kind of kept going off on another tangent, which I thought was still cool. They probably weren't thinking straight, too, because of it.
Yeah.
They open up the box, and there's the first box, Montango, and they open up, and there's a giant fucking dick mushroom right there, right in front of you. You're like, oh, there's a big fucker right there. Like,
Yeah, it's like, whoa, what the fuck? And that's the name drop of the movie, Montango.
Yeah.
And, you know, it all sees that. Yeah, I like that aspect, too. They mentioned, like, the alcohol and the chemicals and shit. I guess what I was thinking they were saying is that the fungus doesn't infect, like, chemicals or unorganic, like, things.
Right.
In that sense. Which I like. It's kind of like the thing, too, where it kind of played with that more in the prequel, where you see, like, the thing spitting out, like, metal, pieces of metal and shit, where it can't imitate those. This thing is pretty much like the thing where it's like this one thing that's absorbing whatever comes onto this fucking island and making it its own part of it, pretty much.
Maybe the whole island was a giant mushroom. Oh.
Yeah, it's Ego from fucking Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, it's Kurt Russell. Oh,
moron. Underneath the island is a giant stem. The head of the island is the actual head of the mushroom. More mushrooms growing on the mushroom.
Speaking of which, how when we actually get to that fucking mushroom forest part where it's like out of something you see in a fucking acid trip or on like a black light poster?
Yeah, oh, Alice in Wonderland.
Like E.G. Subaraya. Oh my god, those fucking sets and those fucking grown mushrooms and shit. Fucking nuts, the effects of this movie. And, I gotta give a big shout-out to the man who actually played Godzilla himself, Hiro Nakajima. He actually plays one of the mushroom people we see later in the movie.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so Godzilla's in this fucking movie, guys.
That's the shit.
And it's kind of funny, because if you go on, like, if you look at, like, what's it called? IMDb is actually, like, his IMDb picture is Godzilla. Just Godzilla. Yeah, this movie's very influential in that sense where, you know, it gets into that paranoia shit that I love. And, you know, once, you know, the writer and Kumi Nozomu fucking get kicked off the boat, and then the skipper fucking steals the boat, like, later on, like, the actual yacht that it was working on. It doesn't really end well for him either, because you end up seeing a note where he actually committed suicide and shit.
Yeah, so he jumped off the boat, everyone's dead. I jumped off, and the guy's like, no, big axe. Nope,
I'm not dead.
I'm not dead.
And then, you know, that's when, you know, the siege part happens later, because they're like, we're going to get off this island. This will be our last day. We're going to grab as much food as we can and get on the boat and get the fuck out of here. And then all these fucking giant mushroom guys start coming onto the ship and breaking it apart and trying to get to them. It's fucking nuts. He chops one of their arms off with the gun handle. It's like...
Yeah. And that's, you know, definitely where the Not a Living Dead stuff starts coming in, too.
Yeah, it's fucking great and atmospheric. This movie has some great atmosphere, too, by the way. For, you know, it is a slow burn. It has that paranoia factor. where we get like all this character development shit, then the true horror happens. And it's fucking nuts. And it goes into the well where he goes to try to get her, and it's too late for her because she starts to eat the mushrooms. They're so delicious, Professor. You should come eat them too. And you just see like everyone's as mushroom. You know, Kumi Mizuma with her mushroom legs and her mushroom hand. I actually have I always post that gif when I'm posting about this movie, where she's eating the mushroom, like, with her little green scarf on with the little mushroom fungus hand she has now.
Well, now she's got a mushroom stamper for her hand.
Yeah.
She can walk around and mushroom stamp people.
It was a shame, because she was supposed to be at G-Fest this year, and I was actually going to go meet her and have this DVD sign of this movie and talk about it. Yeah. Fucking, you know.
Yeah, that's a great scene. I love, you know, he's going through the forest looking for her and just hears the laughter, and it just kind of builds up to his discovery of her.
Yeah, and then it leads to, like, him just, like, he kind of goes berserk. It reminds me of, like, you know, another movie this movie reminds me of? The zombie movies, Shockwaves.
I mean, you know, the ones, the Nazis on the boarding the ship.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've seen that one. Damn.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me, because it has like that scene where she's in the hospital at first, too. It kind of has like bookend scenes of hospital scenes, too, that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of reminds me of that, too, where, you know, you have like this one survivor left, and he gets out, and he's fucking, you know, he's hysterical at this point. And it goes back to like the actual end of the movie where he talks about he tried to not eat the mushrooms, and he tried to have her not eat the mushrooms, and he didn't eat the mushrooms in the Japanese version of the movie. And then we get the reveal of his face. It's coming to fruition where he's like, it's kind of like that scene in like Cannibal Holocaust, where like man is the real cannibal, where maybe it would have been better there instead of being here in Tokyo. Which is the whole point that Hondo is trying to make with this movie. And it builds on that, the actual Japanese end of the movie. And the American end, where he's like, I ate the mushrooms. It's kind of trying to make it more Americanized, where, you know, we don't want to hear about America being bad and being bad for Japan.
Yeah, it's convenient, isn't it?
You know, it's kind of like that whole thing with the original Godzilla. We're like, we're going to cut out everything about Pearl Harbor. I mean, like, Hiroshima in this movie.
Put in some Raymond Burr.
Yeah, put in some Raymond Burr. That big hunk.
That's what
man.
This movie needs.
Imagine Raymond Burr as the mushroom man, the king of the mushroom people. Oh, that'd be great, but he would be like Ironside Raymond Burr in the wheelchair. But, oh my god, yeah, the end of this movie is very impactful, and you know, the more I watch it, the more I love it for that reason, because it builds. And, you know, reading more about Honda's work and shit and the expressionism of the actual movie, I think it's a very powerful piece of cinema that actually a lot of people should see. And there's actually fans of this movie, like I said, off air to the guys. This movie terrified director Steven Soderbergh, and he actually wanted to remake this movie for the longest time. And you know Soderbergh, when you look at his movies, you're like, Soderbergh liked this movie? Because it seems like a movie that, you know, you wouldn't picture like Steven Soderbergh of all directors direct watching. But he actually, I can see it now, especially when movies like Contagion came out. He kind of built on the paranoia of like what we're going through now with the virus and shit. With that, and it kind of has some of the same cinematography from that's in Contagion is actually in Matango. He uses a very similar style of Honda as a director in that sense, where it's cool to see like how this movie influences even today in that sense of directors. Like we said, John Carpenter, even Martin Scorsese, he's a huge fan of Honda, which is weird because he hates superhero movies, but he's like, I like Godzilla movies. Fuck it. You know, but you know, in that sense, these movies, even with the cheesy effects of men in suits, I always say it that's even revolutionized today with like motion cap, sure, where they have like people acting out the CGI instead of just fucking been a fake CGI thing there. It makes it more realistic. That's like the pseudonymation of today, is that motion cat shit that's going on, like the new Godzillas or like anything Andy Serkis does, which is cool. It's cool. I like when technology enhances itself over the ride. But Matango itself is a psychological horror film, which it's one of the better of like Honda's horror films, in my opinion. Like, you got things like the H-Man and the Human Vapor, which it kind of has like similar things happen within them. But this one's just so tightly done with the script and the characterizations that I think it's a masterpiece of its genre.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
So, I have nothing more to say. So, I usually don't fucking get into it, but W, what do you rate Matango, man?
I mean, definitely super high first time watch. I have to say, I went in with, this is one I just kind of put off and probably just didn't take as serious as I should. I was just like, you know, Mushroom Man, that'll be a fun popcorn flick. But once I got into it, you know, the underlying messages and then the actually, you know, well-crafted film with the great sets and locations. I had a good time with this, man. I'm coming 9 out of 10, like, fantastic. I can see how it was very influential.
Matt?
Yeah, this movie was a great paranoia slash infection type film as well. It spawns so many different things happening in this movie. I love the way the mushroom people looked like the evolution of these creatures, where when you start eating the mushroom, how it starts forming on your face. We get to see at the end there, the one guy's eating it, he's starting to sprout some. So the more you eat, the more you turn into this giant fungalide creature. and they just live off that. And they, of course, funguses love wet, dry places, so they could live there forever in this prison of fungi. And now you're stuck, which I thought was really cool. And I love how the island is all by itself. Nothing comes. Everything knows it's not supposed to show up. There's no animals. They even said there's even no bugs. Like, no one's swatting any bugs away. There's no life on this island. And, of course, they're driving along in the boat. They're seeing other boats crashed underwater. It's like even the water wants to bring you to the island. Like, the island somehow bringing people in with the fog. So this island just wants to keep absorbing people and creatures. And I loved it. And I loved how everything was all the paranoia that occurred, how everyone starts turning on each other. So I give this one a 9.5 out of 10. Great flick. I'm going to say probably fucking spend the money and buy it.
hey man, that's what happened with me. Like, I had to watch it first but on my own. Like, I gotta give a shout out to Jerry Herring from Kill the Cast. He actually sent me like a copy, like I did to you, of it to watch that way. In that sense, at first, and then, you know, like, fuck it, you know, tax money came in, $30. Here you go, fucking whoever owns this on Amazon.
Yeah, your third-party seller, fine, I'll spend the 30 fucking bucks now. Here's the 30 bucks.
Yeah, you know, like, I know Criterion's probably going to probably end up putting this out, but I don't know when. That's the thing that sucks. But I can wait. I can wait, and, you know, but I have the movie until then.
There you go.
You know, to enjoy. And it looks great, especially if you... I was actually shocked because it was the first time I watched this on my new TV, and it looked fucking great still. The DVD transfer looks clean and pristine on this movie. So
it does.
You know, but you don't really get, you know, I watched Rodan earlier and that DVD kind of looks like, well, if you watch the English version, it looks like it went through like a washer machine.
Yeah, they get muddied out sometimes, but yeah, this one was like clean.
Now, did Tokyo Shock release that DVD?
It did, yeah. Media Blaster / Tokyo Shock put it up.
They do a good job with their transfers.
Yeah, for the most part, you know, like, some of their Shriek Show shit's kind of iffy if it's uncut or not, in that sense, but the Tokyo Shock shit's pretty good, so, for the most part, I think so, anyways. We all know about that Shriek Show shit, where they made fucking, they put Flesh Eater on Blu-ray and it looks fucking awful.
Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, it's probably no surprise why I picked this movie and why I love it and what I probably rated since I love it. It's 10 out of 10. Classic, in my opinion. Masterpiece of the genre. You can see, even like if you didn't hear about this movie, you could see like a lot of like the filmmakers that we loved growing up probably seen this movie and took some things from it. Even if they said they didn't.
Yeah.
You know, you get that a lot with cinema too. Like, I didn't see that fucking movie. Bullshit, you didn't. It's like Brian De Palma. Yeah, of course I copied Hitchcock. Just come out with it. About De Palma's like, of course. Hitchcock's the best. Like, of course I copied him. You know, just be more truthful when you say you didn't see a movie.
You know,
directors. But it's cool in that sense where we get, like, all the movies that we love from, like, The Thing and shit like that that took from this. And it's great in that sense. So, yeah, 10 out of 10. And you know what that means, Dub? Hall of Ironside, motherfucker.
All right. We're going to do it the scanner way. I'm going to suck your brain dry. Everything you are is going to become me. You're going to be with me, Cameron, no matter what. After all, brothers should be close, don't you think?
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. Inducting the motherfucker in the Hall of Ironside, Matango. That was a great episode, guys. And it's not over yet, but that, thank you for that review. That was great. That was some good shit right there.
It's a nice deep dive, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we should do that with a little bit more films in the future. Maybe just do like one movie every few shows like that, where we just get into it. We can even pick movies that you guys want to do like that, too. I don't have to, you know, like some movies kind of deserve that deep dive treatment. It makes them a little bit more. You get more down in the nitty gritty, and you get to do a little. You get to learn some things that you probably didn't know about the movie even after you watched it,
right?
You know,
and really tackle the underlying messages too, not just the main plot points.
You know, like we could have just been like, "Yeah, IMDb, that's a great synopsis. Let's just give our range a."
Right.
But thank you guys, and I want to thank the few people that actually left comments for the post I made that we were covering Matango. Of course, we first got fucking Sam Edwards, that fucking ginger motherfucker. All right, despite the silly gift, congratulations, homies. Love the show, and here's the 50 plus more. Also, a great movie to discuss for episode 50, Matango fucking rules. You must describe the gift in detail. The gift that Sam sent was of, I think it's a woman dressed as a flower. With like a pink flower head, like kind of looks like Biollante with sunglasses. And she's doing like, yeah, you did it. With like flexing and dancing and shit. It's kind of a weird gift.
Okay.
That was a good description so far. Next up, guy who's been on the show a few times, Jerry Cortez, my co-host of No More Room in Hell. Another reason why fuck Mike Merriman didn't even leave a reply. That's why I like Mr. Venom better, even if we disagree on movies. But Jerry, Mr. Venom, wrote, "Greetings and salutations, Cinema Attackers. Wait, great work on hitting 50 episodes. Love the variety of movies you cover. Thank you for 50 episodes of great entertainment. And thank you all for including me in your podcasting journey. I will look back fondly on my guest appearance on the HGL episode." We all do on that one. Yeah. So much fun. Good luck with the future. Cheers, my friends. Thank you, Jerry. And, of course, my good friend JP from the 22 Shots Row. Is that the Mushroom movie?
No, it's the Mushroom People movie. Different movie. He probably thinks you were talking about fungicide.
Or shrooms.
I do know that JP actually has seen this movie before. I don't remember what he actually. He did say he liked it though. But
very nice.
You know, but you know, I just wish he like said congrats on making it to episode 50. But whatever, JP, whatever. But that's behind the point. But thank you for writing, anyways, JP. I'll give you a share one night.
Thank you, all guys, for the kind words.
Oh, I got one more. I got one more.
Oh.
Oh.
From the good homie James D. Coux.
Nice.
Of course, who actually sent me the thumbnail of this early. So this episode's going to be the fourth silent member of Cinema Attack. He's like the Ringo Starr of the group. awesome choice for episode 50, guys. My thanks to you and Jerry. He's meaning Jerry Herron. Of Kill the Cast for opening my eyes to this a few years ago. Congrats on episode 50. You guys do a stellar job. It's a little different to its earlier incarnation and different lineup, but you adapted and have a very well balanced pod now. You three work very well together. Now give a big shout out to the Double V King, which he means Vince Vaughn. So shout out to fucking Vince Vaughn, yo. Everyone go see Freaky. Yeah. There you go, James. Thank you for the comments. Thank you all who commented. And thank you all for episode 50 of Cinema Attack. Now, W and Matt was probably wondering what I was alluding to when I said earlier I have some special plan for what we're doing.
And that is?
Yeah, or
what? Well, actually, Matt actually mentioned a few minutes ago a film directed by the same director, Fungicide. We are doing a commentary track on Suburban Sasquatch.
Oh, God.
Another first time for me, so yeah, I'll look forward to it.
I don't think I ever bought it.
I actually bought it from the director. It's the same. You're going to be hearing a lot of things. We're actually going to be watching the credits because... spoiler alert, the director had his mom sing the end credits song of this movie.
Oh no.
Yes. We are going to experience Suburban Sasquatch in its glory for the listeners. It's going to be a fun time. I've seen this movie. I know Debbie's going to be like, it's going to be like a Dragon's War moment. What the fuck are we watching, man?
I might be doing some day drinking for that episode.
But, yeah, we're going to be doing that, and it should be fun. It's going to be fun as shit, so look out for that in the future, and we'll do some more episodes down the line. I think a little thing that I kind of want to talk about more Shiro Honda movies in the future, too, but we'll talk in the chats about what we're going to do. We're actually going to get out of here now, though, guys, and we're going to leave you off with probably the most fitting song for this movie. It's a song called Mushroom Man by Les Claypool.
Perfect.
Awesome. Yeah. So, we'll be back in a few weeks with a commentary on Suburban Sasquatch. Yeah, it's going to be great. Or not. So, see you then. Remember, stay away from those mushrooms.
Peace.
See you guys.
Voice with doing flow and the fucking spores, they start to show, and if you're ones or seven trout they came to see with throbbing doubt. The fungi as they pressed about.
Mushroom men.
Now when Mary does